Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. There's one verse 23. After Nachiketas has asked for the third boon, asking really for self-knowledge, to know what happens to the self after death, after the body is lost. It's many different scenarios that we can think. What happens when the body is, when the body dies? Does it go to heaven? Does it just disintegrate? Is it something that's part of the physical body, your sense of self, this me? What happens to me? There are many different darshanas, many different schools of thought about, you know, what happens, many different religions. Where do I go when I die, or do I just die? And so Nachiketas realizes, you know, I'm with Lord Yama, the Lord of Death. Who can answer this question better than Lord Yama? Because he's responsible for all of this, he must know. And so he asks for his third boon. Nachiketas asks, Lord Yama, tell me what happens to the self after the body dies. Some people say that the self is and it continues. Some people say no, it's not. You would be the one to know. Please ask, please tell me that. And Yama says, No. Even this question is confusing, even for the devas. You know, ask me anything else. You can ask me anything else. Don't ask me this. You're not ready for this. It's too confusing. It won't be clear. You're going to waste your time. You're going to waste your boon. I didn't want you to waste your boon. So he tells him this, but Nachiketa says, and when he says, you know, please don't. Swami says, don't bug me about this. Don't ask me about this. Don't become annoyed with me. Just let's leave it. Let's leave it. And but Nachiketa right away. Well, if somebody doesn't turn their mic on or something, then it screeches in the mic.
Oh, my iPod.
Your iPod's fine. It's on. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So anyway, Nachiketa says, you know, he says to Lord Yama, if all the gods themselves are confused about this, you know, who would be a better person than you to explain this to me? There is no better person. He says, there's nobody equal to you. It's not going to exist. And you know this. You must know this, you know. So he says, no, I don't want any other boon except for this one. Right, so that's where we left out. There is no boon equal to this. So this is what I want, he goes. So now Lord Yama goes into this next verse 23, and he answers, trying to dissuade Nachiketas by offering him, by tempting him with a lot of things that might be enticing, might be more important to him than this boon. So he says, Shatayusha putra pautran vrnishwa, Shatayusha putra pautran vrnishwa, Bahun pashun hasti hiranyamashwan, Bahun pashun hasti hiranyamashwan, Bhumer mahat ayatanam vrnishwar, Bhumer mahat ayatanam vrnishwar, Swayam cha jiva sharado yavadichasi, Swayam cha jiva sharado yavadichasi. Shatayushaha putra paltran vrnishwar, Bahun pashun hasti hiranyam ashwan, Bhumehe mahat ayatanam vrnishwa, Swayam cha jiva Shedadaha Yavat Ichasi. So Yemesis Vrnishwa, may you ask this boon, Vrnishwa, may you ask for this, Shatayushaha, you know, that you live for 100 years, or that you have putras, you have sons and grandsons, let all of them live for 100 years. May you live for 100 years, and let your grandchildren, your sons and your grandchildren, let them all live for 100 years. And ask for many cattle, Bahunpan, a lot of cattle, and elephants. You can have cattle, you can have elephants, you can have gold, lots of gold, and horses. So ask for these things. This is all different forms of wealth. Cattle is considered a wealth. Gold, of course, is wealth. Horses, you know, are wealth. Cattle and elephants. So it goes, I didn't say elephants. Bashun is the cattle. You could have Hasti. Hasti means elephants. Hiranyam, gold. Horses. Ask for many, many of those. As many as you want, actually. As many as you want, I will give you. And then also, because if you have all of these things, you're going to need a lot of land. So he says, Vrnishwa again, ask for a huge expanse of land. Bhumehe means of land. And Mahat Ayatanam, Mahat means a great Ayatanam, a great expanse of land. So ask for that. You have, you know, sons and grandsons, children and grandchildren, you know, many of them living long, healthy lives, you know, and of course you'll need so much wealth to support them, right? And then also you need a lot of land. So ask for all of these things, he says. Then, and also, Swayam Chajiva, may you yourself live, Shadadaha Yavat Ichasi, may you yourself live for as many years as you want to. This Yavat Ichasi, as many as you desire. As many as you desire, Shadadaha, as many years as you desire, may you live. Okay. So he thinks this is a really good boon. So he's tempting. After all, you know, you're asking to know something about the self. But that's not practical. It's very difficult to understand that. You would be wasting your boon when you could have all of these things, you know. You could have all of the things that any mortal, any human being would desire. You know? You can have as much of it as you want. And then he goes in this next verse, he says, Etatulyam yadimanyase varam. Etatulyam yadimanyase varam. Pranishwavittam chirajivikancha. Pranishwavittam chirajivikancha. Mahabhumau nachiketas twamedhi. Mahabhumau nachiketas twamedhi. Kama nan twa kama bhajam karomi. Kama nan twa kama bhajam karoti. Now Yama says to him, Yadi manyase varam. If you can think of a boon, etat tulyam. If you can think of a boon which is equivalent to that, equal to that, ask me for that, Vrnishwa, ask for that, like for wealth or for long life, whatever it may be, anything equivalent to what I've just said, you can ask it for it in whatever way that you want to. Bhuma, he says, Maha, Bhumau, Nachiketa, oh, Nachiketa, you know, you can, Tvam Edhi, you can be a king. You can be the ruler of a great, Maha means great, of a great kingdom, you know. Ask for that. Kama nam twa kama bhajam karomi. He says, I will, karomi means I will make you one who partakes in the in desirable objects. Kama bhag means, you know, one who really enjoys the things that are desirable. He says, Among all of the desirable objects that are there, all of the kamas. Kama means two things. It means a desire, and it means the object of desire. So among all of these objects of desire, I will make you one who partakes of whatever that desire is. I'll make you one who is an enjoyer of the desired object, whichever that is, among all the desired objects that are available. Whatever you want, just say that, and that you will become someone who's capable of enjoying that. So he goes on tempting him. You know, he's not over yet. So he says, ye ye kama dulabha marcha loke. Ye ye kama dulabha marcha loke. Sarvan kamans chandita prartayatswa. Sarvan kamans chandita prartayatswa. Imarama saratat. Saturyaha imarama saratas saturyaha nahidrasha labhaniya manushaihi nahidrasha labhaniya manushaihi abhirmat prathabhi paricharayaswa. Abhirmat prathabhit paricharyaswa nachiketo maranam manu prakshihi nachiketo maranam manu prakshihi. So he says, ye ye kamaha durlabhaha marchaloke sarvan kaman chanditaha prathyaswa imaha ramaha sarataha saturyaha na idrashaha labaniyaha manushaihi abhihi matpratabhihi paricharayaswa nachiketaha maranam manuprakshihi. So now he says, ye ye kamaha, whatever desires, whatever desirable things, durlabha, that are difficult to obtain, marcha loke, in this world of human beings, of mortals. In this loka, in this world, we're all subject to birth and death. Okay? We all have limitations. So in this world, whatever desirable experiences or objects are durlabha, difficult to gain, difficult to obtain. He says, sarvan kaman chandita prartyaswa. May you ask for those, for all of those desirable objects. Ask for all of them, whatever, according to your desire. Chandita means according to, as you wish. According to what you desire, you ask for all of them. All of these are so difficult to attain here. Ask for all of them, he says. Then he gives them a list of what they might be. He says, like these ramaha. Ramahas are, in the feminine, like these beautiful, beautiful, very, very graceful women, the goddesses. All of these beautiful, these very beautiful women, along with their sarataha, along with their chariots, right? Together with their vehicles, so these beautiful dancing women, along with their vehicles and their musical instruments, all of them, which there are nothing like them, he goes, nahi, indeed, nahi drishaha, there are nothing like these that can be gained by humans. These beautiful, because Nachiketas is there in Mrityuloka, in the world where Mrityu is, where Lord Yama is. And so there's these beautiful dancing damsels, as Swamiji would say, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful dancing girls with their ornate vehicles and their beautiful musical instruments, you know, just shining with their beauty and sensuality. All of these beautiful women, nothing like these women, you know, exist in the world of mortals. So he says, Abhi mat pratabhi paricharya swa. May you let them serve you. May you impel them to serve you. It's really, it's this paricharya is a causal. So it means, may you be served by them. But then the question is, well, what if they don't want to serve me? So may you be served by them, he says, by all of these beautiful women who have been ordered to do so by me. Because, he says, Pratabhi, by these women, by these beautiful women, you know, who I have gifted to you, who I've given you them. So since I've sent these women to you, they will be happy to serve you, because that's their duty. So you don't have to worry that they will come. They know what their job is. Their job is to take care of you and to serve you. They will do that happily. You don't have to worry. So all of these beautiful women, wouldn't that be a great boon? Yes. So then he says, Nachiketas, you know, he addresses him in Nachiketas, you know, just please don't let this go. Don't ask me about Madanam. Madanam means death. Let it go. Don't inquire about this. You can have all of these other things. Don't ask me about Madanam. Madanam means death. Means don't ask me about what happens to the self after the body dies. No. So he begs him, don't ask me anything about this reference to death. And so then, this is interesting. Now Nachiketas is Yama has made his case and made all of these offerings. So he hasn't really left much out. It's basically anything that you want, and as much of it as you want, that you can have. You can even live for as long as you want. And you can have sons and grandsons, and they will also be healthy and live for 100 years. There's no problem. You can have as much wealth as you want. You know, you can have a beautiful, huge expanse of land. You can even be a king. You know, you can have as many beautiful women as you want. Whatever it is. And anything that you can think of along these lines, in other words, anything within samsara, that's what it is. You can have the whole samsara, as much of it as you want, you know. So please, let go of this boon and take anything that you want within this world of experience of duality. That's basically what it's saying. And so it's interesting how Shankara introduces this next verse where Nachiketas speaks now. Shankara says, Nachiketas, even though being tempted in this manner, he says, evam palobhyamanaha api Nachiketa, he says, even though being tempted in this manner, he remains unruffled, just like a great silent lake, a clear lake, as a clear huge lake that is just sitting there stilly. Nachiketas remains totally unruffled, you know. And being such, then he says in this verse, remaining untouched like a clear silent lake, shobhava shobhava martyasya yarantakaitat shobhava marjasya yarantakaitat sarvendriyanam jaranti tejaha sarvendriyanam jaranti tejaha api sarvam jivatam alpameva api sarvam jivatam alpameva tavaiva vahas tavanritya gite tavaiva vahas tavanritya gite shobhavaha martyasya yet antaka etat sarvendriyanam jariyanti tejaha api sarvam jivitam opameva tava eva vahaha tava nritya gite. So Nachiketa says, Shobhavaha. What's Shobhavaha? Means those things, if we break it down as Shankara breaks it down, he says, Shwaha means tomorrow. So the question Shobhava brings to mind is bhavas, these things that are here, the bhava, these things, these bhavas, these things that are here, will they be here tomorrow or not? Yeah. They are continually changing. We have no idea. All of these kamas that are being offered, they're all shobhavaha. What is their being tomorrow? What is their existence tomorrow? Will it be there, will it not be there? Right? That's what shobhavaha means. So these kamas, all of these desires that you have, and all of these desired objects that you have, they have this quality of you not having, knowing whether you will have that tomorrow or not. So that's what he says. He says, all of these kamas, all of these desires are temporal. We don't know whether they'll be tomorrow, or even if they'll exist tomorrow. And then he says, for the human martyasya, martyasya means for a human being, hey antaka, or antaka means the one who brings an end to everything. It's another name for Lord Yama, the mrityu. Mrityu is death. So it's named Yama. Lord Yama is Lord Mrityu, is Lord Antaka, the one who brings everything to an end, the one who is death himself. If Lord Yama comes to visit you, well, you know he has one job. And his job is to take you. Right? It's time for you to go. That's the end. So Yama is the great, the final disciplinarian. He's the one that take your very life. Okay? So here this, so Nachiketa addresses him, hey Yama. He says, all of these things that you, all of these things that you're offering me definitely are finite. We have no idea how long they will be with us and when they will come to an end. That is the nature in this world of mortals. That is the nature of everything. And then he says, these things, these desired objects that are temporal by nature, they, by their very nature, he says, jarayanti tejaha. They rob away, what's the right word there? They exhaust your tejas. Mm. They burn out the vitality, the tejas of all of your indriyas, of all of your sense organs, all of your organs of action. You know? So you enjoy, but what happens is that your body just eventually totally burns out. So these objects, these temporal objects, really just exhaust, they exhaust and they deplete all of your the energy of all of your sense organs and organs of actions. The indriyas are two kinds. You said the indriyas, even the mind is considered an indriya, antakarana, you know, inner indriya, in a sense. You know, some people call it that. Anyway, physical body, your hands and your feet, your speech, you know, your sexuality, ability to evacuate, all of these things are the organs of action, of the things that your body can do, you know. And then your sense organs, just your five sense organs, and then you have got your mind. So the inner instrument is your mind. So your mind kind of governs and takes in all of the sense data and also is responsible for all of your activity. It's kind of the ruler of all of these things. So your enjoyment of all of these shvabhavaha just simply burn out all of your indriyas. And then he says, even all life is short. Even the life, as Shankara says, even the life of Brahmaji, or say, this is such an interesting perspective. If we look at the creation, which is the Vedic vision of the creation as being cyclical, one cycle of the creation, you know, lasts for billions of years. if we do it in kind of year time, if you go through all of the four yugas, say one cycle lasts for several billion years, okay? During that several billion years, Brahmaji, who is the one who is there in Satyaloka, the highest loka, will last that whole period of time, that whole kalpa, through the manifestation, through the dissolution, Brahmaji will be there. Okay? But even Brahmaji's life is very, very short. It is very, very short because that's only one kalpa or one manifestation of an infinite number of manifestations. So in reference to infinite time, Brahmaji's life itself, which is the longest life you can possibly have in this creation, is itself very, very tiny. It's just like a flick, let alone your life. Your life is barely even, it's not even a blink. It's a blink of a blink. So he says this, all life is very, very short, you know. Then he says, Teva Eva Vaha, you keep your vehicles. The vehicles, you have your vehicles. You know, you can have the vehicles. And you can have the dance and the song. Nritya is dancing, Gita is singing. So this dancing and singing, he says, Teva, you have that. In Sanskrit, they don't have the word have, so they use the genitive. So Teva or Te means of you. But in English, you translate that, you have that, okay? So you have your dancing and your singing and all of that, and you keep your vehicles. You can have all of those, he says. They are all just finite, you know? They come and go, even life itself, even Brahmaji's life is just a flicker. It's so finite. You know, why would I be interested? And so then he goes on, and he says, more. This is still Nachiketa's talking. So he says, Navitena Karpaniyo Manushaha. Navitena Karpaniyo Manushaha. Lapsyamahe Vittamadrakshmachitwa. Lapsyamahe Vittamadrakshmachitwa. Jivishamo Yavit. Ishishyasi tvam jivishyamo yavat ishishyasi tvam varastu me varaniyasa eva varastu me varaniyasa eva. Says na vittena karpaniyaha manushaha lapsyamahe vittam adrakshma chet tva Jivishamaha yavat ishishya sitvam varaha tu me varaniyaha saha eva. So now Nachiketa says human beings are never satisfied by wealth. It says manushaha, man, a person, na tarpaniyaha, is not going to be satisfied, cannot be satisfied, actually means the potential. A human being can never be satisfied with the thing by wealth. He says, we know that. That's everybody's experience. You know, so, who's that guy? I want to tell you about this. Jim. Who's that great comedian?
I know you're going to say Jim Carrey.
Yeah, Jim Carrey.
I've heard him say that, but you're going to say it.
Yeah. What Jim Carrey said, because of course he's so famous and very, very wealthy.
I'm sorry, who?
Jim Carrey, he's a famous comedian, okay? But he made a statement. What he said was, I wish everybody could be wealthy, because he's extraordinarily wealthy. I wish everybody could be wealthy so that they could realize that it doesn't make you happy. That it can't make you happy. It doesn't work. It can't do it. Mm-hmm. I thought, I was so delighted to see that. Because mm-hmm. It was true. He was saying, you know, if you experience having that wealth, then for sure you will realize that it's not going to give you what you were expecting it to give you. It doesn't give you the ananda or the wholeness that you seek. So now, Nachiketa is saying the same thing. A human being, you know, is not going to be satisfied or fulfilled by wealth. It's exactly what he says. And then he also says, and anyway, lapsyamahevittam, we're going to have all that wealth anyway. Why? Adrakshma chetva. If we are here with you, here I am with you, if being here with you, I will have this wealth. He uses it in the plural bill for all of us. If we're here with you, Lord Yama, you know, we get face to face with you, do you think that we won't have the wealth? Of course we'll have that wealth. You'll give that wealth to us because we're your sishas. You'll take care of us. You'll give us that wealth. So he says, lepsyamahe, we will have vittam that wealth, adrakshma, chait, if we see you. In other words, I'm seeing you. And of course, being with you, that's a boon that we'll naturally get. I would not have to worry about that anyway, so why should I waste my boon on it? Is what he's saying. And then he says, jivishamaha yavat ishisha si tvam. He says like this, and not only that, as long as you are ruling, as long as you have this stanam, this position of being Lord Yama, right, we will live. As long as you're in control, as long as you're Mrityu, the Lord of Death, then I know that I will live. You will protect us. You'll take care of me. You know? Because I'm here before you. You know? This is a great boon. By the very fact of being with you, I will get that grace of having the wealth that I, whatever wealth is needed, and however long I want to live. That's just a boon that I will have just by being with you, he says. So then he says, varaha me varaniyaha saeva. So this boon of mine, this my boon, let this boon be the boon. This boon alone is the boon that's worthy of being asked for. It should be this. It is this boon, saeva. My boon, he says, like varaha to me, so this boon of mine is, this alone is the boon deserving to be asked for. All of these other things are temporal. They're not going to give me the satisfaction. They'll burn out my senses. Wealth does not make a person happy. Life, it's short, no matter how long it is. Because even the longest life is temporal. Mm. So in infinite time, how long is a long life in infinite time? Swamiji used to kind of joke about this and say, you know, even for Brahmaji, who has the longest life possible, you know, when you start out that longest life possible, you look ahead and, you know, it's like you look... It's endless. It looks so wonderful, you know. And of course, there's no illness. There's no getting old. There's no becoming thirsty or hungry. The desires that you have are fulfilled. So no problem there, and you will live on forever, relatively. But what about the last few days? When the last few days, now this life becomes very short. Very short. It's the same for us. You say, I remember when I was a little girl, looking at my mother who just turned 30 and thinking, she's so old. Mm-hmm. And then being really glad that I was still really young and it would be a long time. It would be really a long time before I got to 30. That's for 8 or 9, I think. But that was a long time. And I remember thinking I'll still get to play, because I like to play outside and things like that. I'll still get to play for a long time, you know, before I get to be 30. But then, of course, when we get to be 30 and then 40 and then 50, and it starts to keeps moving on, that happens very quickly. In fact, there's almost like no time. Even though there's a long time, there's no time. Also, you all know, if you look back at your life, There's been a long time and there's no time. It's like that. It's something very, very amazing.
Yeah.
So, he says, though I will, this is the boon that I want. I want to keep this. I'm happy with this boon. This boon is meaningful. It's worthy of being asked for, not these other things. Radhaniyaha means it's worthy to be asked for. Right? This is the one that is deserving to be asked for. I will keep this one. And then he goes on. Let's do the next one. Ajiryatam amritanam upetya. Ajiryatam amritanam upetya. Jiryan marjaha kvadastaha prajanan. Jiryan marjaha kvadastaha prajanan. Abhidhyanan varnarati pramodan. Abhidhyanan varnarati pramodan. Ati dirghe jivite ko rameta. Dirghe jivite ko rameta. Ajiryatam amritanam upetya. Jiryan marityaha kvadastaha prajanan. Abhidhyayan varna rati pramodan. Ati dirghe jivite ko rameta. He says here, he says, ajiryatam amritanam upetya means having reached these people, who these amritas, the people who are the devas, who are immortal, who don't go through any type of decay or aging. Ajiryatam means they're not aging, they're not decaying or becoming decrepit, and they are immortal. It's good to say. What if you say you're immortal means you go on forever, but as you're going on, you become older and older and older and more decrepit. No, you go on forever, there's no death for you, but you also don't age. So now Nachiketas has gone to Lord Yama's place, and all of these devas are there. They're all immortal. They don't suffer from birth and death. And also, they don't decay. They actually come into that loka with a good body. They don't come in as a baby and grow up. They come in with a, they come in like a young age, like in their 20s or 30s, something like that, with the prime of their health, you know, and vitality. And then they stay that way with a vital body. So having come to this loka, to this world where all of these immortals are living, you know, then me being Jiryamartya, somebody who is immortal, subject to death, and is growing old and decrepit, you know, as part of the life, way life goes, and Kvadastaha, being down here looking up, you know, being one on the earth, a mortal on the earth, really looking up at these mortals, there's quite a difference there. I know he said, Prajanan, he says, you know, knowing what my condition is and what these people are enjoying, you know, and knowing that there's something more, knowing that there's something more to be sought. Then he says, Abhidhyayan. Now contemplating and really thinking about these, varna means music and rati means dance and pramoda means pleasure. So all of these different types of enjoyments, he says, for a mortal down here living in the earth, because Nachiketas is going to go back, being a mortal, just a mortal person, who would revel, what type of a person would revel in having this kind of long life? A long life as a mortal person, you know? Why would I revel in that? Why would I look forward to that? Look forward to growing old and dying, but I would get to be enjoying these things and these things and these things. Because now I've seen there are different levels of mortality, let alone, now my question becomes even more important, you know? Why would I look for these small things? I know that there's more. What I want to know now is really, what is it about, what is it that actually survives death? You're the one that would know. What is the truth of the whole thing? Why would I be running after all of these pleasures that are so time-bound, Shrabhavaha? You know? Right now, as a mortal, because Nachiketa's got sent up, his father sent him up, you have to kind of remember the story for those of you who don't know. He got sent up by a kind of an angry curse from his father. He got sent up to Lord Yama, you know. But now, as one of his boons, he asked to go back down to his father, and that his father should be happy and remember him, you know. And so then Nachiketa's would live with his father, and his father would remember him, and everything would be fine. For a second boon, yes, let there be some pujas, some rituals we can do to get to Swargaloka, so we can be like with Brahmaji and want all these type of people, the mortals. But then their life is limited also by time, let alone my life down here. Why would all of these, when I realize the limitations even of Brahmaji, let alone the people that are mortal living here, like us, why would I be fascinated, you know, with all of these type of temporary pleasures, let alone with a long life? A long life is actually very short. Yeah. Why would anybody who's realized this, who he says, how he says it is, who would be excited? Who would be excited about having, who would be reveling in having this so-called, called long life? The long life, which is actually very, very short. Yeah. And the sensory pleasures, which themselves are temporal, you know, and which you continue to age as you join them. Okay. So now he wraps up what he has to say, and he says, "Yasmin idam vichikitsanti mityaha mityo, yasmin idam vichikitsanti mityo, yat samparaye mahiti bruhi nastat." Yet samparaye mahati bruhinastat yo yambaro gudam anupravishtaha yo yambaro gudam anupravishtaha nanyantasman nachiketa vranite nanyantasman nachiketa vranite. He says, yasmin idam vichikitsanti mityo, yet samparaye mahati bruhi nastat nahatat yaha ayam varaha gudam anupravishtaha na anyam tasmat nachiketa vranite. The first two lines are from Nachiketas. He says, bruhi nahatat mityo, hey mityo, May you tell us, naha means us, may you tell us that, yasmin, which, vichikitsanti, which many people, which the people themselves doubt, may you tell that about which people themselves doubt. What is it? About yet some samparaye, what happens when the body dies? What happens after death? May you tell us that. And he says, Mahati, which is Mahati means, you know, which offers great rewards. May you tell us that, which itself would be, which offers great rewards. And then he says, so that's what he says in the end. He says, please, I'm keeping with this boon. This is the boon which so many of us have so many doubts about, and which earlier he said, you know, with our sense organs, this is something that whether with our means of knowledge, like our sense perception and inference and all the means of knowledge that we have available to us, they can't give us the answer to this question. This is Shankara's commentary, how we added. They can't give us, as though Nachiketas was saying this, the means of knowledge that we have available to us can't tell us this. But it's knowing this, you know, that knowing this would itself be such a great boon, would give me the freedom that I'm seeking. So this is the boon that I'm asking for. And so then the Upanishad comes and says, this very boon, it is this boon, Gudam Anupravishtaha, which is hidden, which is entered into the, in deep into the buddhi. Gudha means into that secret cave, which is held there in secret. He says, this very boon, which is entered into this most secret place, he says, na anyam tasmat nachiketa vrnite. He says, nachiketas, Nachiketas asked, did not ask for any other boon other than this. From this, no, na anyam means not another. He didn't ask for anything other than this boon. This boon, which has, in an earlier verse, it was said, you know, this is held in the heart of Lord Yama and those few people who know, right? Mm. It's a great secret. So he asked for this boon, which is known to Lord Yama, but which is a great secret, not available to us. It's not even available to our means of knowledge. You can't look at yourself. You can look at everything else. But the one who's illuminating what you're looking at, what you're aware of, who's looking at that? Who's going to differentiate the nature of yourself from all of the experiences that are coming and going? Right? Mm-hmm. Your mind and your sense organs are only able to give you information of what's within samsara. Not of that, right? Not of the very being who's gaining all this information. So who's going to, that is the Gudam. That is a great secret. So he says, the Upanishad says Nachiketas, praising him really, he says, Nachiketas did not ask for any other boon, right? Other than this boon, which is the greatest secret. So that's what the Upanishad has to say. And with that, as we'll start next week, with that now, after Yama, Lord Yama, has tested him really, he's offered him all of these, you know, enticing things that exist within samsara that you can have. You know, he's offered all of them, and and Nachiketas remaining like a still, clear lake, has not budged at all. He's a mumukshu. That's the idea. He's a mumukshu. He's recognized the limitations of all of these things, that they won't really solve the fundamental problem of who am I, what am I doing here, you know? What is free from, we'll see later, what is free from both dharma and adharma? Is there anything about me that is free, that is whole, that is complete? These questions that come later. So this is what he wants to know. It's the who am I question. Who am I? What happens to me when this body dies? What is the truth of myself? That's what I need to know. That's the fundamental question, actually, that we all come to. What is really going on here? If you're here in these classes, you've already had these kind of questions. You wouldn't even end up here. You know, it's a fundamental question that at some point you come to. And so Nachiketa, so this whole first chapter has to do with Yama, Lord Yama, determining whether Nachiketas is actually ready for this knowledge. Because if you still think that these things, these temporal things, will really solve the problem and make you whole and complete, then this knowledge isn't going to be interesting to you. You're not going to have the passion or the desire to know this, really, because there's these things over here I'd love to have, and I'd love to do this, if I could only attain this and attain that, and maybe if I could go to Swargaloka and have all of those enjoyable things, you know, that's what I really want, then I'm not ready to hear this type of thing. It would be boring. And it's not where my passion is. But for Nachiketas, these things that are existing as kamas, as these desirable objects in the creation, are not, that's not where his passion is. He sees their limitations, and they don't excite him anymore at all. And so Yama was going on and on, trying to tempt him. Yeah, Nachiketa's just remained set on what he wants, which is self-knowledge. And so then Yama failed, and he was very happy about it. He was very happy with Nachiketa's and thought, okay, he would be a good student. So we'll look at what goes on here in these next verses. But now, having kind of set the stage, or who is really a qualified student for this knowledge? That's what the first chapter is about. Who is a qualified student for this knowledge? What type of, what things have you understood? It has nothing to do with whether you're a man or a woman, whether you live in India or in the States. It doesn't matter what your nationality is, what your culture is. It goes in the Brahma Sutras, it goes through all this. It doesn't really matter how old you are. None of these things. What caste you are?
No.
That's not what qualifies you for this knowledge. What qualifies you for this knowledge is that desire for liberation, and the mumukshutvam. And that desire for liberation has to do with a proper understanding of what we mean by liberation. Like, what if you say, for me to be free, I need a lot of wealth. For me to be free, I need these certain things. Then my life will be fine. I have everything I want. You know, as long as I haven't figured it out yet. You know, and I think that these things will do the job. I'm not yet a mumukshu. I'm a mumukshu once I understand that the world is incapable by its nature, not because it's me, but by its nature, it's incapable of giving me anything that is not temporal, that is not time-bound. And so all of these pleasures that I'm seeking for, all of them will come to an end. Even my desire for them will come to an end. And so I'm not going to be able to gain really the wholeness that I seek from these things. So I want to know, really, even in asking for who am I really, that's a big question. It's, what is really going on here? Who am I? Why am I here? What is the purpose of life? What is my nature? You know, do I survive death? It's not just, do I survive death? There's many, many questions that are related to that, you know. Because do I survive death and then go on to live a miserable life? You know, what is the purpose of all this? So in this who, do I survive death? Who survives death? Is there a self from free of all of this? Has huge implications. And that's why the Upanishad, Yama just doesn't say, yes, you survive death, nothing happens to you. Okay, well, what does that mean? Right. So there's a whole Upanishad that goes... It's a very thorough Upanishad. It's a very beautiful Upanishad. So we'll start that. We'll start it next week, now that we've finished the story. The story continues, you know, because Nachiketa, so Yama continues to teach Nachiketa, but now he really starts to teach him the Vedanta. Okay. Let's take a moment. Om swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishah go brahmane pyashvamastu nityam loka samasta sukino bhavantu kale varshatu parajanyah prithivi sasya shalini Desho yam shobarahitaha brahmana santu nirbhayaha om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha sarve santu niramayaha sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotir gamaya, mrityor ma amatam gamaya, om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachate purnat.
Namasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Hari Om.
You know, this word secret, that's kind of a loaded word, and I have to stumble on it a little bit.
Gudam is like a secret, but it's also a cave, you know, the guha is the cave that exists in the cave. So it means it's not available to you. It's like one of the greatest secrets is the self is hidden in the seeker, you know? That's considered a great secret, because what you're seeking is the very self of the seeker. So what greater secret can there be? Because the seeker's looking, but the one who's looking is the one that needs to be found. So that's the hidden in your buddhi, the depth of your buddhi. Your buddhi means your mind, your intellect, is your very self, and the intellect wants to know you. See? So it's looking for you. It's looking for its wholeness, for its fullness. But the fullness is the very nature of the one who's looking. And so that's the greatest secret. So that's often used, you know?
Mm-hmm. So the buddhi is the cave, basically.
The cave is
dark, it's unilluminated.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't yet have self-knowledge.
That's right. It's looking in the opposite direction away from it. Always.
Yeah.
You know, the very one that illumines the buddhi is the one that the buddhi is looking out there for. You know? even in terms of meditative experiences, you're still looking at the experience. The experience is illumined. Even though it can be a very subtle, expansive experience, which is really mirroring my being, the vritti, that thought modification that's involved in that meditative experience, comes and goes. That means I come and go. But if I think I'm the thought modification that is mirroring, in a sense, my being, and that thought modification comes and goes, as do all thoughts, right? Then I come and go. So that also is an experience. I have to recognize the self-evident me that is the knownness, the consciousness, because of which this experience is illumined. Even if the experience is the most subtle experience. See what I mean? The problem with any type of experience is that experience comes and goes. So what if I have like this, a non-dual experience? But it's not a non-dual experience. You know why? Because the non-dual experience is bordered by other experiences. So that non-dual experience is taking place within, amidst dual experiences. So it becomes dual because it's viewed as one experience among many, this non-dual experience located in the middle of a bunch of dual experiences. That's dual.
Yeah.
See what I mean? And so even meditative experiences are not it. Meditative experiences that are directed by knowledge, by the use of a means of knowledge that makes the mind differentiate the non-dual self-evident me, conscious being that is present changelessly to all experiences, then that becomes non-dual because the experiences that come and go are mitya. Just by the mere fact that they come and go, they have no independent being or independent of reality at all. They come into being and go out of being, come into being, go out of being. That's what we mean by mitya. They have no, they're bordered by non-existence. They have no being themselves. And in the meditation, that's what I was trying to, for those of you who are able to be with me on that meditation, There is only the experience of self-evident knownness consciousness, which is me, and these experiences that are wafting through. But those experiences don't touch the knownness that is the very nature of consciousness. Right? And so we actually superimpose the knownness, the self-evident nature of consciousness, on this mitya, these things that are coming into being and going out of being without touching consciousness at all. There isn't a knower-known experience. There's only the experience of knownness, self-evident knownness, and the vrittis that are coming and going, thought modifications that are coming and going. You try to find, when we actually slow everything down, you try to find a knower in the whole thing. There is no knower. The nature of the knower is known. The nature of the object is known, and the nature of the subject is known. And there's no duality between, then there's not two knownnesses. There's the known subject, but not and the known object. There is the known subject-object. The known subject, the knownness, the known, that self, is this, you could say like that, the self, self-evident me, is the one non-dual self-evident me of me and of the object. There's not two.
So when you know an object and that's known, do you sense knownness as well at the same time? Or
there's only one knownness.
So
there's only one self-evident known. There's not two. Mm-hmm. And so there, like you would say, you are the self of the subject and you are the self of the object. But when I use the word knownness, I'm trying to have you hopefully looking at your experience of being known. But you're just sitting with yourself, me, I am known. But there's nobody knowing me. There's not somebody over here knowing me. I am just known. That's what we mean by the word self-evident, self-shining. And then you see, are there two experiences of being known? Like I have an experience of being known and the object has an experience of being known. Mm-hmm. No, there's not two experiences. There's only one being known, which I take to be the subject, which it is the subject. It is the non-dual subject, the non-dual self. But there are not two experiences of being known. There's one experience of being known. And then there's all of these vrittis, like we did the rain, for instance, or the physical body, or the, whatever thought flow is there. The thought flow is just passing through. Passing through what? Being known. Being known is the stable. It never changes at all, in any way, no matter what the thought is.
So everybody experiences knownness. I mean,
that is the experience.
Huh?
That is the one non-dual, changeless experience. Experiencing self-evident me. Mm-hmm.
So if you're saying there's no non-dual experience in terms of like a meditative experience of non-duality, what is that then? Is that the mind reflecting just for a moment?
Yeah, now what I say, the point I'm making there is that meditation is very useful as long as you know what's going on there. Because when you're meditating at there's so many different kinds of meditation, but the one I'm talking about right now is, say, when we're turning the mind really away from objectification of like sensory sense objects, or turning that away from the body, or just from the quieting the thought flow, and just turning it more onto its own being, really. It's me, the very me, turning it right to myself. Now we have, but that is a vritti. Okay? That vritti, that thought modification, when I'm doing that, when I'm meditating, that's what my mind is doing. Okay? It's turning toward, in this type of meditation, it's actually turning toward its own content, which is the truth, which is the self. All right? But now, the mind isn't always doing that. So now we say the mind is meditating, it's recognizing myself, it's being with myself, it's having a non-dual experience of myself. Okay. But now the mind, like a bouncing ball, comes out, and now it's having an experience of this room and is talking to you and all these type of things. So now what has happened to the self? So it sounds silly, I suppose, but we get stuck on the vritti's experience of the self that is illumining it. And that self that is illumining it is not dependent on the vritti.
Could you say that again?
The self that is illumining the vritti, the thought modification, you know, and now that thought modification is turning its attention, or its, I'll use terms like gently changing its focus, turning its focus toward me, toward its own being. Now that mind, that is giving the thought modification an experience. Its content is going to be me instead of its content being an object in the world, for instance, or an emotion, or a mood, or a memory.
Yeah.
Now its content is me, okay?
Yeah.
But now I can't not meditating all the time. And so now the vritti, it's time to stop meditating. And so I come back into the room.
Yeah.
And now the thought content is like I'm seeing you, or I'm talking with you, or I'm doing some math, or I'm doing whatever I'm doing, I'm reading a book. Now the thought content is different. So now, in order to experience myself, do I have to go back and have that vritti? So we think that the self experience is given to me by the vritti, by the thought modification. Whereas actually, what we have to recognize, we have to differentiate the self-evident me that is there illumining equally every single vritti. So, what is useful about that meditative recognition of me is that it allows me to differentiate me from the vritti. Even the meditative vritti, or the agitated vritti, but the perceptual vritti thought modification doesn't make any difference. I have now differentiated my own changeless presence. That's the liberation. But what tends to happen is I don't get beyond the vritti experience. I don't move from the vritti, from the thought modification, to the subject of that thought modification, which is me and is ever present. You see what I mean? It's very important.
Well, you always think that thought modification produces me or produces that.
Because it does in terms of all other experience. For all other experience that is not self-evident, I need a vritti. Like, for instance, for me to experience this book, right, I have to be looking at it and my mind has to have a thought modification of the book. Right? If I take the book away, then I'm not experiencing the book anymore, right? And so I need a vritti of the book, and when I have a vritti of the book, then the book is being experienced. So this is how we gain knowledge in the world. But this is different, because in this case, my being that is illumining the vritti is always there, whether it's a vritti of the book, or a vritti of the rug, or the vritti of you, or a vritti of my own being when the mind turns in on itself. You know, I'm still there, the one who's the self of the vritti, no matter what the vritti is. So I have to take it to that point, or I haven't understood.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just waiting to produce vrittis of myself all the time.
Yeah. It sounds though then even nididhyasana can be a little bit of a hang-up, right?
I would
is
say,
that correct? I mean,
no, I would say like this okay. though, Hal. Nididhyasana as part of Vedanta has to be taught as nididhyasana.
Yeah.
So if nididhyasana is taught properly,
mm-hmm.
as part of the pramana,
yeah.
as the way nididhyasana is used, then there's no problem. But these problems are part of the teaching of nididhyasana, because otherwise it's a problem.
I mean, understanding this teaching, right?
Yeah.
Rather than trying to keep having an experience of the self.
Yeah.
Right?
We can keep having an experience of the self. In this, we look at it this way, that self-experience is always there. Okay, first of all, yourself is always there. Your mind and is total, is not used to differentiating itself from you. Right? It always takes itself, whatever its emotions are, whatever it is thinking, whatever it is feeling, it takes itself to be one with yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I am happy, I am sad, I'm having an experience of myself. The ahankar, the I notion, is always on the mind, which has conflated itself with yourself. And so now in Nitta Dhyasana, at the time, well, let me put it like this. When teaching takes place, continually within the teaching, as it's taking place, Nitta Dhyasana occurs. Because if the teaching is working properly, as you're listening to the teaching, your mind keeps seeing what's being said. Because the words themselves are pointing to something there for you to recognize. So these little moments of seeing are taking place continually. In Nitta Dhyasana, we really slow that down to let the mind have a chance to be with me, to get to know me as I am without the dress of the mind. Mm. Right? So then it starts to recognize, the mind starts to differentiate itself from its own being, the stability of my being, as the thoughts are coming and going and coming and going, they're coming and going in me, who am stable. And that stable self is differentiated from all of the different kinds of thoughts, and emotions and moods and whatnot. And so the mind then has the anchor of myself, which the mind has now been differentiated from, and in Nitta Dhyasana, in meditation, all we're doing is giving the mind some time to be with me instead of being me. You know what I mean? You see what I mean? So then I start to, we did this a little bit, this is what we've been doing the last several meditations, where instead of even being aware of myself, well, I tell the mind, you know, gently change your focus to your own being. Then the next step is to just be you.
Yeah.
Put the ahankara, the I notion there, into me, in me. Not in the mind. There's a little shift that has to take place.
So when you do that, then when the mind accomplishes that, it sort of evaporates. It isn't there.
But it can be there or not there. It doesn't make any difference, because once yourself is never not there. Mm. Yourself is always the self of the mind, no matter what the thought is. Or it's never not there. It's just that now, when you say I am, for instance, it's landing on you, on your being, on the truth of you, not on the body, mind, sense organs that have taken over as upadis. They've taken over the I. They become a locus for what, that's what we mean by ahankara, the I notion. They become a locus for, you know, where the I lands. If I say I am, like we're sitting here and you say I am, where does that I am land? Does it land on me, the Atma? Or does it land on the mind? Or the mind, sense organs, body? Where does it land? If you're an Ajnani, if you don't have any self-knowledge, it'll just land on me, this person here. That's where the I is, that's me, this body, mind, sense organs person with all these experiences, that's me. But if you have self-knowledge, the I lands on who you are, you know, which is stable, no matter whether this body is 1 year old or 10 years old or 50 years old, or whether your mind is happy or sad or agitated, or whether you're doing this job or that job or this job or this relationship or that relationship, the I is always the same, you know. So that's what becomes your, in your day-to-day experience, there's all the experiences of the body, mind, sense organs, relationships, all of that still is going on. But there's also the stable you. And the I lands on you.
And when you see this stable me, it doesn't diminish the experiences or the thoughts or anything that's taking place.
No, because before you know and after you know, the mind is still working, the body's still working, the sense organs are still working, the relationships are still there. You know, it doesn't, nothing is diminished. But the way you relate to the world is a little different. It's different because you're no longer searching for yourself. You're no longer searching for your wholeness, you know? The wholeness, the fullness of your being. That's not in the search anymore. You know, that you have that. So even when your mind, out of what we call habitual ignorance, is acting like you don't know anything, you're still there amidst that silly, that kind of behavior. You're still there. And then your buddhi, your intellect, you learn how to just pull your mind back when it starts getting itself into trouble, just from habitual.
And there's no space for criticism or anger about that.
Well, the criticism and anger is a... that really has to be analyzed. Like, what is the source of that anger and criticism, you know? That's kind of a psychological problem that we need to work on.
Okay, it's different.
Well, it is different. It's a psychological level. We bring a lot of baggage with us. You know, like say you're very critical of yourself all the time, or you have self-hatred, or all of these, some of these problems that are in like epidemic to our era. You know, these type of ways of thinking, we have to do different types of inner child work, and then your knowledge, your self-knowledge, supports all of that. It's a deeper level which is very supportive to some of these types of ways of thinking that we have that actually produce a lot of pain. Your knowledge gives so much strength to allow that type of work to go on, because you are just sitting there as all this work is going on. But the work is important, because the psychological work is important, because it creates a lot of pain. Why? You don't have to have that pain. There's psychological pain, there's physical pain. You don't question in reference to your knowledge, should I or shouldn't I get rid of this physical pain? You would say, if I can get rid of this physical pain, I'm going to get rid of it. If I can have a healthy body, I'm going to have a healthy body. Why would I choose not have a healthy body, or why would I choose to be in physical pain? You wouldn't, if you can do anything about it. If you can't do something about it, then you have to learn other coping skills. But if you can do something about it, then you will. Why wouldn't it be the same with mental pain? If there's complexes or hurts or even attitude, you know, like a cognitive behavior, if there's, I have ways of thinking or relating in the world, but even, and there's a fundamental problem of not having self-knowledge, but then there's other topical problems of ways I relate to myself or relate to the world, or different complexes are there, then if they're bothering us, they're hurting us, then there's something for me to work on there, because why would I not?
Yeah.
If it's maybe bothersome to other people, but it doesn't bother me, then, you know, I may not feel that I have to work on it, you know, if nobody really minds, if it's not bothering me, then I don't need to work on it. But if it is bothering me, if it is hurting me, then why not work on it? And we have a lot of ways, even within Vedanta, and let alone psychology, there's, you know, there are a lot of ways to work on our mind, which relieves me of a lot of pain. So we have to take care of those things too. Rather than, you know, that we've known all of this about emotional bypass for many years now, so most people know about that.
Yeah.
You don't want to use your knowledge to circumvent, you know, or bypass some problems that you have.
Well, it doesn't really bypass anyway.
It doesn't,
I mean,
really,
you're still
work.
Stuck.
Yeah. You try, but it doesn't work. Yeah. It's better just to learn how to deal with these things and take care of them, you know, in ways that are effective and helpful, so that your mind can enjoy the shanti and kind of the pala of this knowledge. knowledge itself takes care of a lot. But then we still have the complexes and things that we have to know how to handle.
And that's true of everyone. I mean, you don't have to think that you're a particular flaw in this picture.
That's true of everybody. Everybody has their own baggage, their own particular things that to work on. That's how it is. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with it. It's you should be, you know. It's kind of a level of mastery. You can gain a level of mastery over your mind by knowing how to be with it. One of the key things, you know, is that, you know, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have done to yourself, and don't do to others as you wouldn't have done to yourself, is to apply that to yourself. how you treat yourself. We know we're supposed to apply that to how we treat others. But if we treat ourselves that way, our own mind and our own hurts and things in that way, then you'll find that your whole psychic system relaxes, because there's an inner friend. There's somebody inside who's kind and cares about you. It changes the whole inner space, you know? So it's important to kind of listen to yourself. How do you talk to yourself? How do you treat yourself? Are you kind? Are you a kind person to yourself? Are you somebody, the way you treat your own mind, does your mind want to be with you? Or does it, you know, want to run away and hide? Let's get away from her. Because if there's a kindness inside, then all of the different parts and little complexes and little children, little ones inside, they feel safe. It's like being in a home where you have a loving parent instead of abusive parents. Where you like to be home, you know, because it's safe, it's nice, it's, you know, you're loved.
When we started doing the little ones practice, it was like once I was being more nice to them, they all started coming, and I didn't know how to say, like, okay, let's take a break now.
Oh, you just say that. It's okay.
Yeah,
what they have to know is that you'll come back, that you're going to come back. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, people say, when you start doing that inner child work, and you say, does anybody inside, because I used to have people say, just ask, anybody inside have anything to say? And like 15 kids raise their hand inside. Who do you call on first? So you say, you know, don't worry, every one of you is going to get your chance. You have to know everyone will get their chance, but you can't ever lie, you have to do what you say. You say you're going to come back, you have got to come back. Because there's a real relationship, internal relationship that's important to.
Well, when you use that word, gently shift, that's that kind of kindness to one's own self. I mean, is that why that word is there?
No, well, actually why I say like something in a meditation, just gently shift your focus to yourself. Because I don't want you to feel like you have to not have these other experiences. Like, say I'm listening to the rain, but I'm gently shifting my focus to myself. The rain experience can still be there. It's just a gentle shift of focus. It's not that I'm trying to wipe out what I was experiencing before.
Part of the voices that I felt like I had to come back to were all the ones in the world, like the voices of suffering. Like, okay, so I took a vow to benefit sentient beings, and so here's all this like inner voice of, well, what about me, what about me? And if I just, you know, it seems endless, you know?
Well, it would be endless if you're trying to let every being in the universe tell you about their suffering, that would be endless. So, you can do that tonglen. You know how to do that.
What?
It's a Buddhist meditation where you breathe in the suffering of all of those beings that are calling to you, and then you breathe out, you know, peace. especially if they're nondescript beings that don't have to do really with you. They're not the little children inside. If they're the little children inside, then that's handleable. Mm-hmm. One at a time, you know. That's not, it takes a while. It takes a while for everyone inside to settle down and to feel loved and cared for, and, you know, to start feeling space inside depending on your situation. But if you're starting to imagine all of the suffering in the world, which is a difficult imagination, but say you are feeling like that, then something like that type of meditation, breathing in the suffering of the world and breathing out peace as a prayer, something like that, I would think.
Can I ask you one thing more about this? This thing about the self-evident self and not really, basically, you don't need the buddhi or the mind, right?
Right.
The thing is, though, that in the waking state, the buddhi is always there, but it's not that you have to prove. I mean, you can go through the analysis, like in the Mandukya Upanishad, where when the mind is submerged, still there is the self-evident self doing an anyanya adhidhasa, right?
Anyanya adhidhasa, yeah.
But it's not that you have to. Yeah, I'm kind of a lawyer, so I'm trying to prove to myself that
you
know, because if it's always there, if the mind is always there, but you're discriminating and seeing, the mind doesn't even have to be there for the self-evident self to be known. It is knowingness itself, right?
Yeah.
But you can't actually be in a situation in the waking state where the mind is not there. But it's a matter that the buddhi can discriminate that knowingness is always there and is not dependent on any particular vritti, right?
That's right.
Even if there's various vrittis, you don't have to still all the vrittis, but you see that it's the same knowingness that's apparent no matter what the vritti is.
That's right.
Right.
And the vritti comes into being and goes out of being.
Right.
Every experience comes into being and goes out of being. So that negates its ownership of any being.
Okay.
But the being never comes into being and goes out of being.
And you even can be aware of the vritti going out of being.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll tell you another little logic that is really, I love this logic. It's called anvaya vyatireka. The anvaya is when this is, that is.
That's what I was meaning to say, anvaya vyatireka.
Oh, yeah. So anvaya vyatireka goes like this. When this is, that is. When this is not, that is not. Okay? If that's the case, when this is, that is, that's the envy of the Vyatireka, when this is not, that is not. Okay? Then you can see there's a dependency, a relationship between the two. Right? But when the Vyatireka doesn't work, like say you said the envy, when this is, that is, but the Vyatireka doesn't work, when this is not, that still is. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you apply that logic, then there it negates any type of real relationship between the two things.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's just the anvaya, well, when this is, that is, so therefore they're dependent. No, because what if the other, what if that thing can still be there when the other one goes?
Mm-hmm.
So like when the sun is, the day is. When the sun is not, right? The day is not, right? So that means the sun and the day are totally dependent on each other. You can't have the day without the sun. The day is the sun, and the sun is the day is. When the sun is not, the day is not. That's an anvaya vyatireka. But now if you say, you know, if you were to say something like, when the sun is, the day is, but when the sun is not, the day still is, then you'd have to say, oh, I guess the day is not dependent on the sun, right? We know it's dependent because that anvaya vyatireka works. But so now here, if I say, when the thought is, I am, when the thought is gone, I still am.
Mm.
Then that thought, let me put it like this, because then you can really, it sticks a little bit more. When the sad thought is, I am, when the sad thought is gone, I still am. When the agitated thought is, I am, when the agitated thought is gone, I still am. What did you say? When the meditative thought is, I am, when the meditative thought is gone, I still am. then you can say where we really use the Envayavyatireka is when the waking state here is I am. When the waking state is gone, like the dream state is, I still am. Right? That's a biggie. You know, because the waking state, this waking universe, is totally negated by the dream universe in terms of experience. Just, I'm not saying that for us on another level, but we know that the waking state is still here, but I'm talking about your experience. When the waking state is, I am. When the dream state is, I still am. When the deep sleep state is, I still am. The mind doesn't know that at the time because it's an unmanifest condition, but when you wake up, you say, I had the deep sleep. I slept so well, I didn't know anything that was going on. So you're actually remembering the experience now that the mind is awake to be able to perform that memory function.
But
so,
you know,
so these are three different states of experience that all negate each other, but you're present to all of them. It's also the same, like when you have, just throughout the day, so you had this experience, I had this experience, then I had this experience, then I had this experience, mm-hmm. right? These experiences are replaced one by the other, by the other, by the other, but I was there for all of them. And so even when you're looking at thought flow, there's somebody who's not flowing. A thought flow means the thought comes into being, goes out of being, then this, followed by this, followed by, like, say, it's a, like a train of thoughts. But I was present to every one of them. And but each one of that train of thought, that flow, the flow of thoughts, comes through one at a time. They come into my consciousness, go out of my consciousness, so to speak, but conscious being is not flowing. It simply is.
Yeah.
So these that Envayavyatireka, that's what you're
that's
meaning.
What I was,
yeah, yeah. That's a very powerful logic. It's an experiential logic. It's a logic to apply to your experience to try to figure out who you are. You're the one who's not leaving. You know? The one who you... who didn't arrive and is not living.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that self-evident knownness. When you're awake, you can sense that. But when you go to sleep or when you have dream, that quality of self. Being
no, in the dream it's still very much there. That sense of me. That,
mm-hmm.
But in the deep sleep, the mind is in unmanifest condition, so there's nobody there. The sense of me is still there, but there's no mind that's talking about it,
mm-hmm.
right? And then when that mind comes out again into
mm-hmm.
manifestation,
mm-hmm.
then it talks about that deep sleep experience when
mm-hmm.
it was having the deep sleep experience. It couldn't talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yourself is not a knower. Yourself is knownness. Conscious being, not conscious being of something. For it to be conscious being of something, you need a mind or sense organs to have that subject-object duality. Yourself is not performing a function of knowing, it's the very knownness which every experience enjoys. You're actually attributing knowership to consciousness that is not in your experience. You're not having an experience of knowership. You're having only an experience of knownness.
So the knownness in deep sleep is the same as the knownness in
waking. Yes, but but the mind isn't. There's mind's not commenting on it. There is no mind to comment. There's the mind is an unmanifest condition.
Mm-hmm. If someone wakes you up from a deep sleep, you go, "Oh man, I was having
such
a
good
sleep."
Yeah.
So when we say the knower of Brahman, or
the one we're talking from the standpoint of the mind.
So the jnana-nishtha, abiding in the knowledge that is limitless wholeness.
Jnana-nishtha, that nishtha, means the one who has that clarity. Their knowledge is clear. You know, and that clarity doesn't go away.
So just having the intellectual, oh, okay, so that makes sense, but then living in a different way.
Well. The okay, that makes sense is fine, But there's some seeing that's involved there. There's some differentiation. And so then there can be doubts that come up. Mm. And so Jnana Nishtha is when all of those doubts have been resolved. Like you'll see, and then you'll say, yeah, but what about that? You know, or how can, if I have knowledge, how can my mind be acting like that? All of these kind of, all kinds of different levels of questions. Those, you have to go through all of those because the mind is the one that's gaining knowledge. Yourself isn't gaining knowledge. Your mind is gaining knowledge. Yeah. Alrighty.